In the last two sermons I've given, I talked about the revival of the ancient Roman Empire in Europe. And I covered the political revival, those 10 revivals, renewals, and also talked about the combination, the collaboration between church and state. Today I'd like to talk about the economic aspect. And the title of the sermon is Europe's Corrupt Economic System. Now in Revelation 17, the religious nature of the last resurrection of the Roman Empire, also called the Holy Roman Empire, is vividly depicted. In Revelation 18, it focuses more, but not exclusively, on the economic nature of that last revival. I'd like to begin with by quoting from an interesting comment by the Ryrie Study Bible, which has this to say. In chapter 17, Babylon represents a false religious system that will center in Rome. In chapter 18, it represents more the political and commercial aspects of the revived Roman Empire. Thus, the term stands both for a city and for a system, religious, commercial, related to that city. For instance, like Wall Street is both a place and also a system. So we are warned, especially in Revelation 18, not to have anything to do with that Babylonian economic system, not to accept the mark of the beast and becoming rich thereby, by doing things which we're not supposed to be doing, only to make some money, only to feed the family, only to work on the Sabbath because we have to have an income. Notice what it says in Revelation 18, verses 3 and 4. For all the nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth have become rich through the abundance of her luxury. Notice the reference to the merchants of the earth. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins and lest you receive of her plagues. The warning is there, and the warning is very important for us to understand, because let's look quickly at the kind of things this Babylonian system is trading with, the merchandise they are engaged with. We heard in the announcement about a very powerful organization, a company, BlackRock, and what all they are already involved with. Notice Revelation 18 and verse 13. Revelation 18 and verse 13. This is some of the merchandise we are dealing with. Cinnamon and incense, fragrant oil and frankincense, wine and oil, fine flour and wheat, cattle and sheep, horses and chariots, and bodies and souls of men. Bodies that could be, let's say, organs which are being taken from dead or maybe not even dead people to be sold to others on the black market and maybe not even on the black market. And then the souls that would be the people themselves. Slavery is being alluded to here. People are being enslaved, sold for merchandise to do some forced labor. But it also goes further. Revelation 18 and verse 24. It says, and in her was found the blood of prophets and saints and of all who were slain on the earth. The system is, according to this statement, responsible for all the mass murders in the world, past, present, and future. How did they get to the point where people are willingly follow their lead? Now, let's go back to Revelation 18 and verse 3. We just read that because of their sorcery. And also now in verse 23. Revelation 18 and verse 23. The light of a lamp shall not shine in you anymore, and the voice of the bridegroom and the bride shall not be heard in you anymore. For your merchants were the great men of the earth, for by your sorcery all the nations were deceived. You see that sorcery, you see that witchcraft, which is part of that system. Lehmann Strauss wrote a commentary about the book of Revelation, very interesting one, and he comments on modern Babylon's wealth and religious persecution. And that is what he wrote. The wealth of the Roman Catholic Church and the Protestant denomination combined adds up to many billions of dollars. The unscriptural doctrine of purgatory, the last rites and masses for the dead have brought untold wealth into the treasury. Sir Robert Anderson of Scotland Yard fame estimated that Rome was guilty of the death of 50 million Christians. You're talking about the Holocaust. We're talking about 5 million people have been slaughtered, have been killed, have been murdered. Here we are talking about 50 million people. The commentary goes on to say, she will be judged because of the untold number of victims whom she slaughtered in the Inquisition and in Bartholomew's massacre, Bartholomew's massacre, whatever that massacre was. She must pay for those shocking murders and for the many bloody persecutions which followed, and I might want to add, and which are going to follow, because we haven't reached the final word yet on this one. Now, this Babylon, as I said earlier, is both a city and a system. And it's clearly defined. I also mentioned already the city of Rome. It's clearly defined as such in Revelation 17 and verse 9. Let's read it again. Revelation 17 and verse 9, a very famous scripture. Here is a mind which has wisdom. Not everybody will understand it. The seven heads are seven mountains, it says here in the King James, on which the woman, the fallen woman, sits. It says here seven mountains. Others have correctly seven hills. The NIV says seven hills. The Living Bible says seven hills. Some modern German translations say seven hills. It's talking about a city. And what city is built on seven hills? We should all know that. We learned that in our history lessons in school. Also in Revelation 17 and verse 18. And the woman whom you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. So here clearly Rome is being identified as the city which rules, which kind of influences the people of this world. And we find that God will destroy the city. Well, in fact, he will also destroy this entire system. But in Revelation 18 and verse 10, we read this. Revelation 18 and verse 10. The merchants, the kings of the earth, they are standing at a distance for fear of her torment, saying, "Alas, alas, that great city, Babylon, that mighty city, for in 1 hour your judgment has come." Another passage, Revelation 18 and verse 8. Therefore, her plagues will come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she will be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judges her. So the city of Babylon, another word for Rome, will be destroyed in 1 hour, in one day, it says. God will wipe it out. as well as the religious, the cultural, the economic, the political, the military system it represents. All of that will be destroyed, you might say, in a heartbeat. And the city in particular will become a habitation and prison for demons. Revelation 18 and verse 2. This angel cried mightily with a loud voice saying, Babylon the great is fallen, is fallen. It's not just talking about the Babylon of the past, because it's mentioned twice here. It's also going to fall when it comes to the end time. And has become a dwelling place for demons, a prison for every foul spirit, and a cage for every unclean and hated bird. In fact, it's already a habitation for demons today. But then, when it will be destroyed, that's where those demons will be, because they will be imprisoned for 1,000 years during the millennium. As I said earlier, that city is part of an economic system, the economic system of Europe. Church and state are working hand in hand. You see, something which is odd to most non-Germans is a fact that in Germany, the government is even collecting church tax for the big churches. Something which is an oddity, which virtually happens nowhere in any other country. Now let me just talk a little bit about how powerful economically the EU and Germany already are. Germany is Europe's largest exporter and importer and the third largest exporter globally, with over $2 trillion in exports in 2022. Germany is also a major importer with $1.5 trillion in imports in 2022, reflecting its role as a key player in global supply chains. With a gross domestic product of 4.305 billion euros in 2024, Germany is the third largest economy in the world. Now that's just Germany, after the United States and China, and just ahead of Japan, making it the largest economy in Europe. In 2023, Germany, France, and Italy were the three largest economies in the European Union. Now, when it comes to the European Union, it is a wealthy economic and political bloc that is the world's largest trading bloc. Did you know that? The world's largest trading bloc already now. The EU's economy is the second largest in the world by nominal terms and the third largest by purchasing power parity after the United States and China. Now, Russia is only on place 14, depending on what source you believe. Some say it's place 11. In any event, way behind the United States, way behind the EU, way behind China. The EU, or the GDP of the EU, is estimated to be $20.29 trillion in 2025. I found this comment quite interesting, where this wealth came from. It says, Europe is considered wealthy due to a combination of factors, including its historical dominance in global trade, the Industrial Revolution, which spurred significant economic growth, the exploitation of colonies for resources, a competitive political landscape that fostered innovation, well-developed institutions that support economic stability across the continent. However, it's important to acknowledge the complex and often problematic history of colonization that contributed to European wealth. So Europe is clearly an economic powerhouse already. And since I'm talking mostly today about the trading aspect of it, we'll go into that one in more depth. Because there's an interesting description of a, you might call it city, you might call it system, in the Old Testament. And you find that in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 27. Ezekiel, chapter 27, and I like to go to verses 1 to 9. Because here, Tyre is described. But we're not talking about ancient Tyre. This is an end-time prophecy. We are talking about modern Tyre. And it's described here in the first nine verses as a great merchant ship, a symbol of its importance as an economic power. It's another name for Babylon. It's another description of the European economic system in the present, but still even more so in the future, talking about the last resurrection of the ancient Roman Empire. Now let's read some of those interesting verses about this European system. Chapter 27 and verse 1. The word of the Lord came to me saying, "Now, son of man, take up a lamentation for Tyre and say to Tyre, you who are situated at the entrance of the sea, merchant of the peoples on many coastlands, thus says the Lord God, O Tyre, you have said, I am perfect in beauty. Your borders are in the midst of the seas." Think in terms of Italy and how it's surrounded by certain oceans or seas, plural. "Your builders have perfected your beauty. They made all your planks of fir trees from Senir. They took a cedar from Lebanon to make you a mast." They are part of a description of a merchant ship. "Of oaks from Bashan, they made your oars. The company of Ashurites have inlaid your planks with ivory from the coasts of Cyprus. Fine embroidered linen from Egypt." Remember, Egypt, important, keep that in mind. "Was what you spread for your sail. Blue and purple from the coast of Elisha was what covered you. Inhabitants of Sidon and Arvad were your oarsmen. Your wise men, O Tyre, were in you. They became your pilots. Elders in Gebal and its wise men were in you to caulk your seams. All the ships of the sea and their oarsmen were in you to market your merchandise." So clearly talking about a economic power, heavily involved in trading. The interesting thing is the next two verses, verses 10 and 11, are switching the perspective somewhat, and now suddenly talking about a military power. It says in verse 10, "Those from Persia, Lydia, and Libya were in your army as men of war. They hung shield and helmet in you. They gave splendor to you, men of Arvad, with your army." "Were on your walls all around, and the men of Gamet were in your towers. They hung the shields on your walls all around. They made your beauty perfect." But then, beginning in verse 12, it switches back to the economic aspect. And we'll read that in a moment, but why that switch? Now think in terms of what we read in the book of Revelation, that they would even trade with the bodies and the souls of people. It's entirely possible that the suggestion is here that the power is not just received through peaceful means, but that this power, the system became extremely powerful through the methods of war, slavery, incarceration, and so on. Now, let's notice how this economic system is again described beginning in verse 12, and let's also note what areas, what countries are all included. And of course, we also will see how the system is being described. And I will identify some of those countries based on archaeology, based on history, and based on the Bible itself. Ezekiel 27 and verse 12. "Tarshish was your merchant." Tarshish, a city is in Spain, old city in Spain, could very well be symbolic of the economic power of Spain. It says, "Tarshish was your merchant because of your many luxury goods. They gave you silver, iron, tin, and lead for your goods." Javan, it says, Yavan, it could be Japan, it could be Greece. And then it goes on to say, "Tubal and Mesesh, Now, Tubal and Mesech, originally nations of peoples, originally between the Black and the Caspian Sea, could be a reference to, of course, the Russian cities of Tobolsk and Moscow. So Tubal and Mesech were your traders. So they traded with the European system. They bartered human lives and vessels of bronze for your merchandise. Again, human lives, slaves, will be traded within the system. Now, we should all understand that the final revival of the Roman Empire is going to be led by the modern Assyrians. And we should understand that the Assyrians can be found today mainly in Germany and Austria. Now, if you look at the history of the Assyrians, both in ancient times and in more modern times, they have been known for transporting their captives from their own country to other countries. Those who claim that such terrible things as captivity and slavery of entire nations couldn't possibly happen in our sophisticated 21st century forget that it has happened recently, less than a generation ago. I already quoted the book by Fischer on Nazi Germany last time. I'd like to send you another quote for considering, because that's what he said. Because the Nazis had grandiose plans when it came to conquering, enslaving occupied peoples. And he said, most of these grandiose plans reflect the Assyrian nature of German policy. I found this very interesting because he's making a clear link here. It reflects the Assyrian nature of German policy toward conquered people. Heinrich Himmler declared that, and I quote, whether nations live in prosperity or starve to death interests me only insofar as we need them for slaves for our culture. Kultur, he said in German. By the end of 1941, almost 4 million foreigners worked in Germany, most of them Poles. Foreigners were rounded up in town squares, in churches, cinemas, other places where people congregated in great numbers and shipped back to Germany in freight cars. As to workers from Eastern Europe, the German conquerors treated them essentially like slaves, Fischer is saying. The rest were either incarcerated in concentration camps, sent to the Reich as slave laborers, or simply allowed to starve to death. Of at least 5.5 million Soviet prisoners of war, half died. This happened not too long ago. A forerunner to what is going to happen in the not-too-distant future. Let's go back to the book of Ezekiel, chapter 27, and let's read verses 14 to 16. Those from the house of Togarmah, which has been identified as Siberia. Now, some have felt it could also be a reference to Armenia. So the house of Togarmah, they traded for your wares with horses, steeds, and mules. The men of Dedan, that would be an Arab people, but it could also mean Rhodos, that's how other translations have it, they were your traders. Many isles were the market of your hand. They brought you ivory tusks and ebony as payment. Now, the interesting thing is payment, the Hebrew says forced tribute. So again, it suggests occupation and enslavement. Then it says Syria was your merchant. Now, others have your Edom, that would be Turkey. They were your merchant because of the abundance of goods you made. They gave you for your wares emeralds, purple, embroidery, fine linen, corals, and rubies. Now let's look at verse 17. Who else is being mentioned here who will have merchandise, who will trade with this Babylonian system? in an economic relationship and in trade arrangements, at least in the beginning. It says Judah and the land of Israel. So wherever the house of Israel is today, including the British Isles, the United States, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, they were your traders. So they would be trading with the Babylonian European system, which of course we know they're already doing it now. And it will continue until there will be a final development which will stop all of that. And they traded for your merchandise, all kinds of things, wheat, honey, oil, and balm. Now, balm is interesting because that could refer to medical supplies. So medical supplies were being traded to and from the European economic system. Now, let's talk a little bit about the United States of America and Great Britain, because they are mentioned here as those who have been trading with the Babylonian European system. I like to go to the book of Hosea. And I like to turn to chapter 5, because there more is being mentioned about this kind of trading. Hosea 5, beginning verse 9. Ephraim. Now, this is mainly referring to the modern United Kingdom. Because we know Joseph had two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. Ephraim stayed in Great Britain when they moved from Europe. And Manasseh, of course, moved further to the United States. Ephraim, it says here in verse 9, shall be desolate in the day of trouble, or the day of rebuke, it says. Among the tribes of Israel, I make known what is sure. So Ephraim is being warned, has been warned, will continue to be warned. God says, I'll tell you right away what is happening to you. It says in verse 10, the princes of Judah are like those who remove a landmark. I will pour out my wrath on them like water. Removing a landmark would also include to changing borders and occupying land, which doesn't really at this point belong to Judah. It goes on to say, verse 11, Ephraim is oppressed and broken in judgment because he willingly walked by human precepts. Therefore, I will be to Ephraim like a moth, and to the house of Judah like rottenness. And when Ephraim saw his sickness, and Judah his wound, then Ephraim went to Assyria. And it should say here, and Judah sent to King Jareb. Many translations add here, and Judah. King Jareb, another word for the king of Assyria. The king of the north, the beast, Jareb, the fighter, the one who is always involved in quarrels. But he cannot cure you, it says, nor heal you of your wounds. Why is that? Now, maybe he doesn't even want to, but that's not the point, because God is behind it. He says in verse 14, for I will be like a lion to Ephraim, and like a young lion to the house of Judah, I will tear them and go away. I will take them away, and no one shall rescue. Now let's continue with how Hosea talks about what else is being revealed, what's going to happen in Hosea chapter 7, verses 8 to 12. Hosea 7, verse 8. And when you read that, and you think of the former glory of the United Kingdom in particular, and then you read this description as to how God is looking at it now, you cannot help but agree how accurate those descriptions are. And these were written thousands of years ago, for our time today. It says, Ephraim has mixed himself among the peoples. Ephraim is a cake unturned. Aliens have devoured his strength, but he doesn't know it. Aliens from the outside, you could say, but also aliens from the inside. All the foreigners living right now in the United Kingdom, huge percentage. And it says, well, they have devoured your strength, and they don't know it. Yes, gray hairs are here and there on him, yet he doesn't know it. And the pride of Israel testifies to his face. They're still proud about their glory, don't seeing or don't realizing the fact that that glory is long gone. The pride of Israel testifies to his face, but they do not return to the Lord their God, nor seek him for all of this. Verse 11, Ephraim is also like a silly dove without sense. They call to Egypt, we talked about Egypt, and they go to Assyria. Wherever they go, I will spread my net on them. I will bring them down like birds or the birds of the air. I will chastise them according to what their congregation has heard. Again, it's being pronounced. It's being clearly stated what's going to happen, except they are not listening. Woe to them, verse 13, for they have fled from me. Destruction to them because they have transgressed against me. Though I redeemed them, yet they have spoken lies against me. They didn't cry out to me with a heart when they wailed upon their beds. They assemble together for gain or grain and new wine, and they rebel against me, it says in verse 14, or the way which you have just read that. Now, this is United Kingdom, but let's not forget that Ephraim can also refer to, when it's not specifically identified, it's just referring to the United Kingdom. It can also refer to the United States of America. And so everything what we have just read about the United Kingdom can very well refer to the United States of America as well. And think about it. We are still talking about the American way of life and the pride we are having, making America great again. Not realizing that our greatness has also gone. Notice Hosea chapter 11, verse 12, and then Hosea 12, verses 1 and 2. Hosea 11 and verse 12. Ephraim has encircled me with lies. Notice, and the house of Israel with deceit. Here it's clearly identified now as being also a description for America, the house of Israel mainly. Now this says, but Judah still walks with God. No, that's not what it says in the original. It says, but Judah doesn't walk with God either, even with the Holy One who is faithful. And then in chapter 12 and verse 1, Ephraim feeds on the wind and pursues the east wind. He daily increases lies and desolation. They make a covenant with the Assyrians. And oil is carried to Egypt. Here comes this merchandise. Here comes this trade concept again. So here Ephraim, talking about the United Kingdom, talking about the United States, they're making agreements of merchandise with Assyria, also with Egypt. He goes on to say in verse 2, the Lord also brings a charge against Judah and will punish Jacob. Jacob, again, referring to the entirety of the house of Israel, including the United States of America, and will punish Judah and Jacob according to his ways. According to his deeds, he will recompense him. And so we read that modern Assyria will conquer the modern houses of Israel and Judah. Hosea chapter 9 and verse 3. And verse 1 identifies who is being talked about here as the tribes of Israel. In verse 3 it says, they shall not dwell in the Lord's land, but Ephraim shall return to Egypt and shall eat unclean things in Assyria. So both the nations of Israel and Judah will go into captivity. The land of slavery for the house of Israel, especially Ephraim, is mainly modern Assyria. It says they will eat here unclean things. Now it says the house of Israel will also go to Egypt, but notice it doesn't say to the land of Egypt. Because we read that they will not go back to the land of Egypt. In Hosea chapter 11 and verse 3. Hosea 11 and verse 3, I taught Ephraim to walk, taking them by their arms, but they did not know that I healed them. I drew them with gentle cords, with bands of love, and I was to them as those who take the yoke from their neck. I stooped and fed them. He shall not return, verse 5, to the land of Egypt, but the Assyrian shall be his king, King Jareb. So the distinction is being made here between the land of Assyria and Egypt. Egypt here doesn't stand for the Egyptian nation. It stands for the kind of slavery we are talking about. They will return into slavery, this kind of Egyptian slavery, but they will not go back to the land of Egypt. They will go to the land of Assyria under this king, Jareb. In Hosea 11 and verse 10. They shall walk after the Lord. He will roar like a lion. When he roars, then the sun shall come trembling from the west. Now in the Hebrew there is no word for northwest, but this is what's being talked about here. Some passages talk about the land of captivity as being west of Jerusalem, but most talk about it as being north from Jerusalem. So taking the passages together, we're talking about coming back from a country northwest of Jerusalem, which is no other country than Germany, being situated northwest of Jerusalem. And then it says in verse 11, and they shall come trembling like a bird from Egypt, but it doesn't say the land of Egypt again. Egypt, that Egyptian slavery, but it says like a dove from the land of Assyria, because they will be enslaved, as we have just read earlier. Many people were enslaved in Germany during World War II as slaves, as forced laborers. And it says, and I will let them dwell in their houses, says the Lord of hosts. Now, I'd like to give you some news aspects here, because I will not be able to do a standing watch this week, because I will be out, away from home for a week. So let me just tell you what I would have said in a standing watch program. Newsmax wrote on February 26, President Donald Trump said Wednesday during his first cabinet meeting that the European Union was formed to take advantage of the United States and that his administration soon will be announcing tariffs of 25% on the 27-nation bloc. The European Union was formed in order to screw the United States. I mean, look, let's be honest. The European Union was formed in order to screw the United States. That's the purpose of it. And they have done a good job. But now I am president. So the point is the distance, alienation, between the EU and America will continue until we are going to find what is going to happen very soon, and I mean very soon. They will be enslaved. They will be destroyed. America, that is, in a third world war. It's clearly prophesied. The most recent events which took place this week didn't help. Talk about the clash between Trump and Vance on the one hand and Zelensky on the other. And of course, if you're listening to broadcasts from Fox News and Newsmax, and if you read conservative papers, you get one viewpoint. And if you read just about almost every other paper from Europe, let's say, you get a completely, totally different viewpoint. Piers Morgan, he wrote that it started with a silly question by Marjorie Taylor Moore's boyfriend and conservative commentators. And the name was given, I never heard that name before, never heard I did I hear ever his magazine or whatever he is representing. But he asked the question why Zelensky didn't wear a suit, which he claimed was disrespectful towards the United States. Well, of course, Elon Musk doesn't wear a suit. Of course, Zelensky answered he doesn't do it because it's the time of war. By the way, Churchill never wore a suit either during the time of war. But that then led to Vance jumping in and accusing Zelensky of not being grateful to the United States and not having said thank you once. Well, Zelensky thanked the United States at the very beginning of the meeting, and at least 33 times in the past. Vance then talked about diplomacy. And when Zelensky asked what kind of diplomacy, and that a peace deal would have to have security guarantees for Ukraine, then Trump lost it. And that's when the shouting match began, more like shouting from Trump. You know, when I came home, when my wife came home, I had forgot that this was going on. She asked me, what about, did you see that about Trump and Zelensky? I said, oh, no, I didn't. And so then we turned on the TV, but then they only showed glimpses and pieces of the whole situation. Then my wife and I found the video of the 48-minute session, so we watched it all. We saw exactly what was happening. Let me just say, if J.D. Vance would have opened his mouth, the thing would have not escalated the way it did. Because it started actually nicely to begin with. Vance did a good job in Germany when he spoke at the security conference about censorship, but he did a lousy job now when it came to what happened in this meeting. The reaction from all over the world was one of complete condemnation of America. Just give you a few excerpts from papers which were published. Leaders lined up behind Ukraine and praised its embattled president, the statements coming one after the other, from France, Germany, Poland, Spain, Denmark, Netherlands, Portugal, Czech Republic, Norway, Finland, Croatia, Estonia, Latvia, Slovenia, Belgium, Lithuania, Luxembourg, Ireland, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. Just about the entire world. And of course, Russia is very happy about this. It says that many in Europe addressed their statements of encouragement directly to Mr. Zelensky. Ursula von der Leyen, president of the European Commission, said on social media, referring to Mr. Zelensky, be strong, be brave, be fearless. You are never alone, dear president. And so President Emmanuel Macron of France just joined in. Interesting, Friedrich Merz, the new prospective chancellor from Germany, wrote and says, dear Volodymyr, and then he said that his country would stand behind Ukraine in good and in testing times. We must never confuse aggressor and victim in this terrible war. Mr. Merz added, apparently referring to Mr. Trump, who has called Mr. Zelensky a dictator and blamed him for the invasion. Daniel Freed, who is a career diplomat under American presidents of both parties, who just returned from a trip to Brussels, said the Oval Office clash had jolted Europe's capitals, generated a wave of sympathy for Mr. Zelensky, and upended a peace process that appeared to be gaining traction. The Europeans are horrified and dismayed, he said. Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer of Britain, who was there in order to create some kind of a better relationship between Trump and Zelensky, trying to woo Trump by giving him even an invitation from the king, is now trying to be the mediator after this clash took place. Today, he met with Zelensky in Britain. Very friendly meeting. They embraced each other. They spoke beautifully about each other. Of course, he also said, we'll always be unwaveringly supporting Ukraine. Tomorrow, Zelensky is going to meet the king. And then they have a European summit, mainly European summit in England, and all the Europeans are coming, NATO representatives are coming, and the reason is, what are we going to do now? Because we can't trust and rely on the United States anymore. What are we going to do now? Because the fear is that it's not only an end between the relationship between America and Ukraine. In fact, it was announced today that Trump is considering stopping all help as of as soon as possible, this week, next week, to Ukraine. He also kept talking about that Europe is not paying enough for Ukraine. The fact of the matter is Europe has been paying more when it comes to money to Ukraine than the United States has. A lot more. And Zelensky tried to point that out, but he was overruled, shouted at, so he couldn't get that point across. We also find that Dutch Prime Minister, that's interesting because Geert Wilders is over there in the Netherlands. He said, the Netherlands supports Ukraine as firmly as ever, now more than ever. Deutsche Welle wrote that EU foreign policy chief Kaja Kallas said, we will step up our support to Ukraine so that they can continue to fight back the aggressor. She stressed that the free world needs a new leader and that it's up to Europe to take this challenge. T-Online, a German magazine, wrote on February 28, a peak of arrogance. Donald Trump and J.D. Vance simply kicked Volodymyr Zelensky out. What a bottomless disgrace. The completely wrong film is being shown in Washington today because it is not Zelensky but Putin who is playing with a third world war. It was not Zelensky whom Trump has repeatedly insulted as a dictator who started this murderous war but Putin. It was not the Ukrainian president who behaved disrespectfully towards the United States. First and foremost, it was the American Vice President J.D. Vance and President Donald Trump who not only treated Zelensky disgracefully, but also damaged their own office and America's reputation. What happened in Washington today is a historic disgrace in America's often glorious history. Die Welt, another German paper, wrote February 28, the scandal in the White House has shown Europe that it can no longer rely on the United States under Donald Trump. Not in the defense of Ukraine, but also not in the defense of the values that make up the free West. But it goes further. Bild wrote, it was tragically a historic moment in the Oval Office that will bring joy to the Kremlin, a moment that can change the world and poses huge problems for Europe and Germany. For Vladimir Putin, on the other hand, it was the best day in a long time. What Trump and Vance did there has nothing to do with the values of the free West. Trump and Vance didn't say a word to Putin. Simply unbelievable. The full escalation is the worst outcome that could have happened. Roderich Kiesewetter, who speaks for Mr. Merz, the next chancellor, said, what Donald Trump's attack on Zelensky in the Oval Office shows is that Donald Trump has changed sides. The USA is no longer a partner. Now, do you see the incredible outflow out of this, what's happening here? You know, people are saying, well, how could it possibly be that Europe will attack the United States in a war? Here we have it, right there. That's how it's developing. It's getting worse and worse and worse. And Trump is only in power for 1 month now. A Polish paper, I'm not trying to pronounce the name of that Polish paper, but that's what they wrote. In American history, no U.S. president has ever treated a foreign head of state, let alone an allied country, in this way. This shows where the United States, the leader of the free world for decades, has developed under Trump. Zelensky made the emperor naked. He showed who Trump really is. The Telegraph said, UK paper, such a display of aggression by the White House towards a Western-oriented head of state, let alone an ally engaged in an existential military struggle, is unprecedented. Trump and Vance were undoubtedly wrong, factually, geopolitically, and morally. A paper from Spain, again, not pronouncing that one, saying the exchange of blows live alive and in front of journalists is the impressive symbol of the end of an era. It is a brutal confirmation of the United States' abrupt change of course, both in content and form, compared to the last 80 years. It's interesting that those who are and have been completely in unquestionable support for Zelensky here in the United States, like Marco Rubio, like others, Graham, for instance, now suddenly switched sides 180 degrees and completely and totally supported Trump and what he did. I felt the following articles by the BBC very interesting. It says, the public breakdown also signals a major crisis looming between European members of NATO and the United States. There will be many more doubts and questions about the U.S. commitment to European security outside Ukraine. The biggest is whether President Trump would keep the promise of predecessor Harry Truman made in 1949 to treat an attack on a NATO ally as an attack on America. Those concerns are based on what appears to be Trump's determination to restore a strong relationship with Russian President Vladimir Putin. He has put heavy pressure on Ukraine while offering Putin big concessions that would have to be made by the Ukrainians. The security of Ukraine is coming a poor second, and Europeans are worrying about theirs as well. President Zelensky's refusal to make those concessions has infuriated Trump. Ukrainians believe they are in a war for national survival and that Putin would break any promise to end the war if he is not deterred. And then you have Johan Vadepool, who is also a spokesman for becoming president or the chancellor of Germany, Merz. He said, "The scenes from the White House are shocking. How can you stab the president of an invaded country in the back like this? Free Europe will not betray Ukraine." Now, this gives you a glimpse of what is happening right now in Europe all over the place. Not just Europe, but I want to emphasize and specifically focus on Europe. You see, people are saying, oh, well, you know, and Trump was saying, oh, well, we have this deal and we get the deal and then we talk about security later. And he was asked, well, you think that Putin is going to honor this deal? Oh, absolutely, you know, he has no reason not to. How naive can you get? I mean, it sounds like Hitler. Chamberlain goes there, you know, says, oh, declared peace. It is time because he was appeasing Hitler. Well, Putin's definition of peace is perhaps, oh, a peace of Ukraine, a peace of this country, a peace of that country. Have you forgotten that he invaded Crimea? Have you forgotten that he in the past invaded Georgia? Have you forgotten that Russia has invaded Czechoslovakia? I still remember that very well, with tanks against Mr. Dubček. And on it goes. The history is clear. Russia wants, Putin wants to have the former Soviet Union being restored to its full power and glory. He said it was a big mistake by Gorbachev, mainly, that the Soviet Union was dismantled. Not one iota will he shrink away from that. This peace deal means nothing without really security. And that security, if America is not willing to give it, will have to come from Europe. The problem is, they say, well, the natural leader should be Germany right now, but Germany is in a complete mess. The old government is pretty much gone. The new government is not in establishment yet, in existence. And so now Mr. Starmer is trying to be that mediator. The guy from France wants to be the mediator and the leader. But a person will arise in Germany, sooner or later. The one we are waiting for. As this continues to reach the bottom of a situation which at one time was a friendship between the United States and Europe. It's no longer friendship at all. Not at all. But we also find that Assyria, part of the Babylonian system, will be destroyed. And the Bible tells us since Babylon, this European system, did not show mercy when placing the yoke of slavery on the neck of the peoples of the house of Israel and Judah. Neither will she receive mercy from God, and she also will be destroyed very quickly. We have already read that regarding Babylon in the book of Revelation. But now let's turn with me, please, to Isaiah chapter 47. Isaiah 47 and verse 6. God says, I was angry with my people, talking about the house of Israel and Judah. I have profaned my inheritance and given them into your hand, Babylon, Assur, king of the north. You showed them no mercy. On the elderly, you laid your yoke very heavily, the yoke of slavery. In Ezekiel 27, let's go back to this one now. Let's read now also verses 25 and 26, which we haven't read yet. Again, it's talking about that modern European system. It's situated in the midst of the seas, as we have already read. But then let's look at this in verse 26. It says, "Your oarsmen brought you into many waters, but the east wind broke you in the midst of the seas. Your riches, wares, and merchandise, your mariners and pilots, your caulkers and merchandisers, all your men of war who are in you, and the entire company which is in your midst will fall into the midst of the seas on the day of your ruin." So the east wind is being talked about here, breaking Babylon in the midst of the seas, the east wind. Now, you can look at Daniel chapter 11. Let's quickly turn to this because here is a parallel scripture. How this is going to happen. Daniel 11, verses 44 and 45. "But news from the east and the north shall trouble him." That's the king of the north. That's the beast. What news? Well, rumors, obviously, that Russia and China and others are preparing a war and attack on Europe. And so here, the king of the north is trying to preempt them. And he is going to attack them first. The same situation, which was the case under Stalin and Hitler. Both were preparing for war against each other. Both knew that. But Hitler was faster. Of course, he completely and totally lost the war. In Russia, it was a debacle. The same is going to happen to the king of the north. It says, "Therefore he shall go out with great fury to destroy and annihilate many. He will plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and no one will help him." That is going to be the end of the beast, the end of the king of the north. But again, it's the east wind. It's coming from the north and the east, those which will destroy modern Babylon. Now, when you read the scriptures in Ezekiel 27, and you compare them with the scriptures in Revelation 18, you find the identical description, completely identical, showing that they both talk about the same thing. They're talking about the same systems. It's all the Babylonian system, but it's also talking about the fact that it's daughter Babylon. In many passages, when it comes to the end time, it's talking about the daughter Babylon, showing that it's not talking about ancient Babylon at the times of, you know, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel. It's talking about a future Babylon, a Babylon of our times. And of course, you can look at these scriptures later, Jeremiah chapter 50, verses 41 and 42, and chapter 51 and verse 33. But who will be instrumental of destroying modern Babylon? Again, people, if they would only know, would have a completely different perspective to the war between Russia and Ukraine. Because ultimately, Russia and Ukraine will be together fighting and destroying Europe. Isaiah chapter 13, verse 1. It says, "A burden against Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amos saw." And then notice verse 17. "Behold, I will stir up the Medes against them." The Medes, Ukrainians, partially the Russians too. Ukrainians are also called White Russians. "I will stir the Medes against them who will not regard silver, and as for gold, they will not delight in it. Also their bows will dash the young men to pieces, and they will have no pity on the fruit of the womb. For their eye will not spare children. And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldeans' pride, will be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah." That's how Babylon, the religious, military, economic power, will be destroyed. Now, what's the context here? When is this going to happen? The Bible makes this very clear. Let's go back to verse 6. Isaiah 13 and verse 6. "Wail, for the day of the Lord is at hand." So this is happening at the time about a year or so prior to Christ's return. You may say, oh, that's still way off. No, wait a minute now. We are saying that once this peace deal is made with Russia, then Russia will have time to build up their army again, which is pretty much demolished. And they say it will take maybe 5 years or a little bit longer until they are in a position where they can attack Europe. That's what the Europeans are saying. Well, of course, the Great Tribulation will start about 3.5 years before Christ returns. And then, of course, you have the Day of the Lord, which starts 1 year before Christ returns. It goes on to say in verse 9, "Behold, the Day of the Lord comes, cruel with both wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he will destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not give their light." Here we're talking about the heavenly signs. "The sun will be darkened in its going forth, and the moon will not cause its light to shine." And verse 13, "Therefore I will shake the heavens, and the earth will move out of her place, in the wrath of the Lord of hosts, and in the day of his fierce anger." That is the time setting here when this is going to happen. Appeasing Putin is so naive as it was to try to appease Hitler. When the war started between Ukraine and Russia, I gave a standing watch program about 3 years ago. And I believe strongly the same as I said 3 years ago. Putin is being demonically influenced. His MO is the same like Hitler's. He's trying to get as much as he can if people letting him. And we should never, ever forget that. But Isaiah continues with another interesting prophecy, which I'd like to quickly talk about before I close today, which is also dual in nature. And it applies both to the ancient city of Tyre, and it applies to the modern religious counterpart. We read in Isaiah chapter 23, verses 15 to 18. Isaiah 23, verses 15 to 18. "Now it shall come to pass in that day, that's the day of the Lord, that Tyre will be forgotten 70 years, or at least the time rather than leading towards the day of the Lord. That Tyre will be forgotten 70 years, according to the days of one king. At the end of 70 years, it will happen to Tyre, as in the song of a harlot." Now, who is a harlot? It's a harlot who writes on the beast in Revelation 17. "Take a harp, go about the city, you forgotten harlot. Make sweet melodies, sing many songs, that you may be remembered. And it shall be at the end of 70 years that the Lord will deal with Tyre. She will return to her hire and commit fornication with all the kingdoms of the world in the face of the earth. Her gain and her pay will be set apart for the Lord. It will not be treasured nor laid up, for her gain will be for those who dwell before the Lord to eat sufficiently and for fine clothing." Now, historically, the ancient city of Tyre was forgotten and lost all influence over other nations for 70 years, starting from the attack by Nebuchadnezzar in 609 BC until the fall of ancient Babylon in 539 BC, so from 609 to 539, 70 years. Then Tyre began to become known and influential once again. But as I said, this prophecy in Isaiah is also an end-time prophecy for the modern religious system of Tyre, as understood by the phrase "in that day," you know, leading towards the day of the Lord, the time of Christ's intervention in human affairs, which is still ahead of us. So what happened? How did this prophecy apply to our time? In 1859, Garibaldi united the Italian states and, by all standards, destroyed the power of the Catholic Church. Now, at that time, the Pope even had to flee Rome. That's how he was being looked at. But in 1929, exactly 70 years later, Mussolini signed a concordat with the almost bankrupt Catholic Church, enabling it to again become very prosperous and powerful. A Vatican state suddenly emerged, which didn't exist before. And so the Catholic Church, as we said at the beginning of this sermon, one of the most powerful institutions in the world. But then we also read, of course, in verse 18, that ultimately the wealth of that religious power will be used for good in the millennium. That brings us to the conclusion of the matter, and that is, you're being warned. have nothing to do with this economic Babylonian system. Of course, not also with the religious system either, but I'm talking about the economic system because it's tempting. I mean, that's very tempting, right? You could just think, okay, well, I'm part of this wealth. I'm accepting the mark of the beast, you know. Okay, so I do buy and sell on the Sabbath. What's wrong with that? I have to take care of my family. God says you will share in the plagues of Babylon if you do that. So let's not do that. We have seen today how evil, how rotten, how corrupt this Babylonian system is. Let's have no part with it.